Chapter 2: Introducing the Productivity Bond. The Core Mechanism. The productivity bond is a sovereign debt instrument whose return is linked to measurable improvements in economic efficiency. Instead of paying a fixed interest rate regardless of economic conditions, it adjusts its return according to productivity. The basic formula is C of t equals 1 plus pi of t times 1 plus the minimum of the maximum of alpha times NPI growth floored at F and capped at C minus 1. Where C of t is the annual coupon payment, pi of t is inflation measured by the consumer price index, NPI growth is the growth of the national productivity index, alpha is the investor participation rate, for example 0.7, F is the floor on real return, for example 0%, and C is the cap on real return, for example 5%. In plain English, the holder receives inflation protection plus a capped share of productivity gains. The floor limits downside. The cap limits the government's exposure to exceptional gains. Consider a $1,000 bond. If productivity rises by 3% and inflation is 2%, the coupon is approximately 4.8%. If productivity falls, the payment can fall to the inflation component alone. The investor, therefore, retains purchasing power protection while participating in improvements in efficiency. The mechanism is deliberately simple. The National Productivity Index. The National Productivity Index, or NPI, provides the underlying measure. It must be transparent, auditable, independently calculated, and resistant to political manipulation. The proposed formula is NPI of T equals GDP divided by hours worked to the power of 0.40, times energy consumption to the power of 0.25, times material consumption to the power of 0.20, times capital stock to the power of 0.15. Where H of T is total hours worked, E of T is primary energy consumption, M of T is raw material consumption, and K of T is capital stock. The weights 0.40, 0.25, 0.20, and 0.15 approximate factor cost shares in developed economies over the past two decades. They remain fixed for the life of the bond. Sensitivity analysis in Appendix C indicates that the results remain robust to plus or minus 5 percentage point changes in any individual weight. The methodology is also legally locked into the bond's trust indenture. Neither the government nor the legislature can change the formula, data sources, or payment rules during the bond's life. An independent statistical agency publishes the NPI on a fixed schedule. Historical revisions do not alter coupons that have already been paid. After a specified finalization period, each observation becomes final for payment purposes. These safeguards are essential. A state contingent bond is only credible if investors can trust the state variable on which its payments depend. The NPI is designed to measure one thing: how much economic value is produced from the resources used to produce it. It therefore rewards improvements in efficiency, technology, resource use and processes rather than simply more extraction, longer working hours or greater consumption. The objective is not to make the economy bigger, at any cost. It is to make it better at producing value. How the bond works. The structure is straightforward. At issuance, the government sells the bond to investors at a market-determined price and receives the proceeds. Each year, the NPI is calculated. Its annual change is applied to the coupon formula, and the resulting payment is made to investors. At maturity, the government repays the principal and retires the bond. The principal remains fixed. The maturity is fixed. The coupon varies. That distinction is the heart of the instrument. A conventional bond resembles a fixed-rate loan. The payment remains largely independent of the borrower's economic circumstances. The productivity bond is closer to an income-sharing arrangement. Payments rise when productive performance improves and fall when it weakens. The investor's return. An investor's total return comes from two sources: the coupon, which varies with inflation and productivity; capital gain or loss, determined by the market price of the bond. The main difference from conventional sovereign debt is the first. If productivity growth is weak, the coupon is lower. If productivity accelerates, it is higher. The floor limits the downside, while the cap limits the upside. The result is a security designed to offer inflation protection and participation in productivity gains without the volatility of equity. It is not intended to compete with high-growth assets for maximum returns. Its purpose is different: provide relatively stable income while linking investor rewards to improvements in the economy's productive capacity. The government's cost. From the government's perspective, the coupon becomes a variable financing cost. In strong periods, payments can increase alongside productive performance and potentially tax revenue. In weak periods, payments decline, reducing pressure when public finances are already under strain. This creates a potentially counter-cyclical structure. During a recession, governments typically face falling revenue and rising demands for spending. A conventional bond continues paying its contractual coupon. A productivity-linked payment can decline instead. The mechanism therefore shares some of the economy's risk between borrower and lender. For institutional investors, this also creates a different risk profile from conventional sovereign debt. Its payments respond primarily to changes in productive capacity, rather than simply to interest rate movements or demand cycles. The proposed structure could therefore provide diversification for insurers, pension funds, and other long-term investors. The model estimates tracking error of approximately plus or minus 1.5% annually, relative to a conventional sovereign benchmark, and a potential Sharpe ratio improvement of 0.2 to 0.3, although these figures are model outputs rather than guarantees. The floor and cap. Two controls define the range of the variable return. The floor sets the minimum real return, proposed at 0%. Investors therefore retain inflation protection, even when productivity declines. The cap limits the maximum real return, proposed at 5%. This prevents an extraordinary productivity surge from creating an unbounded financing cost for the government. The trade-off is deliberate. Investors accept limited upside in exchange for protection against severe downside. Governments accept a variable cost in exchange for protection against unlimited payouts. Together, the two boundaries create a defined range within which the bond can respond to economic conditions. The counter-cyclical property. The central attraction of the structure is its potential to move with economic capacity. When productive performance improves, investors receive more. When it deteriorates, the government's payment burden can decline. That is the opposite of a rigid obligation that remains unchanged regardless of circumstances. But there is an important qualification. The critical caveat, the feedback loop. The simulation reveals a counterintuitive risk. Under the model's realistic calibration, the productivity bond reduces expected financing costs by 3.1%, yet distress probability rises from 11.1% to 88.2%. Why? Because the bond can pay more than conventional debt during strong years. If the government finances those larger payments by borrowing, the debt stock grows faster. When a downturn arrives, the coupon falls, but it is now being applied to a larger stock of debt. The apparent counter-cyclical benefit can therefore be undermined by debt accumulation during good times. Think of it as a treadmill that speeds up when the weather is good. The government receives stronger economic conditions, but the resulting higher payments can cause it to borrow more. By the time conditions deteriorate, the debt burden may have become larger than before. This is not a minor detail. It is the most important design problem identified by the simulation. The proposed solution is a principal adjustment mechanism, automatic partial debt forgiveness during severe recessions, or a limit on debt accumulation linked to the NPI. The purpose is to prevent higher payments in good years from creating a larger underlying liability that overwhelms the savings generated in bad years. The productivity bond, therefore, should not simply be declared counter-cyclical because its coupon moves with productivity. Its entire debt structure must be designed to preserve that property. The detailed simulation and proposed mechanism are developed in Appendix C. Comparison with conventional bonds. The productivity bond is not intended to replace conventional sovereign debt. It is an additional instrument that changes the way part of a government's liabilities respond to economic conditions. Critics may point to earlier GDP-linked instruments, including UK and Argentine examples, which experienced liquidity problems and substantial pricing discounts. The proposed design addresses two weaknesses in those structures. First, data uncertainty. The NPI methodology is locked and observations become final after a defined period, reducing the possibility of disputes arising from later revisions. Second, asymmetric downside. The real return floor provides investors with a defined minimum, rather than exposing them to unlimited downside from weak economic performance. The objective is not to eliminate conventional bonds. Governments could issue both, using a diversified debt portfolio to balance predictability, liquidity, and economic responsiveness. The simulation suggests an illustrative mix of approximately 30% productivity bonds and 70% conventional bonds, though the optimal allocation would depend on country-specific conditions and further testing. The simulation results. The productivity bond's primary advantage in the model is lower expected financing cost, but that result comes with a critical qualification. Under the baseline calibration 10,000 simulated paths, a 10-year horizon, and theta_AI=0.30 expected financing cost falls from 0.5154 to 0.4994, a reduction of approximately 3.1%. However, distress probability rises from 11.1% to 88.2% in this particular calibration. The reason is the feedback loop described above. Higher coupons during productive periods can increase debt service, requiring additional borrowing and enlarging the debt stock. The resulting liability can then outweigh the savings from lower payments during downturns. This finding changes the proposal in an important way. The productivity bond is not simply a fixed bond with a clever variable coupon. It requires an accompanying mechanism that controls the accumulation of principal. That is why the principal adjustment mechanism is not an optional refinement. It is part of the architecture. The next chapter examines what happens when the gains generated by greater efficiency are treated not as a reason to demand ever more output, but as a dividend of becoming better at using what we already have.